good morning, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know, we did a Zoom this week, and I touched on it last week about the peak of pessimism. And I'll come back to that a little bit, or periodically during the show, because some of the things that we shared, the charts, are just, to me, really eye-opening as to how wrong way we perceive things when it comes to the market, right? When it comes to the market, we want things to look good. Like, we want really high corporate profits. And of course we do, and they look to be very high again this quarter. We'll see. There's been an awful lot of noise about how those numbers have to come down, but they haven't come down, right? I mean, it's just talking heads talking about how they have to come down doesn't make it so, right? I mean, it just, that has been this unbelievable mantra. And if you will, it's the echo chamber, right? That's what we just walk into every day when we plug into, say, a CNBC or, you know, a market chat type of thing. We just come right into it. And what are they chatting about? What everybody else is chatting about. You know, oh, we're worried about energy. And so they talk about energy. Or, you know, they're worried about inflation. So they talk about the inflation. Then they talk about the Fed. And everybody talks about the Fed. There's very little insight. And there's some. But here's the difficulty all the time with it, right? How do you know what is insight? And how do you discern that from noise? How? You know, I mean, if you don't know all that much about it, and most people don't, there's very few actually percentage-wise that really kind of have a full-blown grasp of markets about what's cheap and dear, and, you know, they live it, they breathe it, what have you, and understand the differences between value and growth and where they are in relation to each other and so on. I mean, you know, there's 100 other things, because you just have to be in it all the time. And I'm not saying you have to be in it because to be a great investor, you can basically could have owned the S&P 500, left it alone for your entire life, and you're a great investor. End of story. But there are things in the market when we're thinking about, and people are talking about what's going on within that market, that there are people from time to time will say something insightful. But there's a tiny percentage of the population that could discern whether that was actually insight or just more noise. Because it happens so much. This echo chamber, constant, constant, constant. And they're all talking about the same things. And when we're talking about that things can't get any better, right? They just can't because of this, 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 and this. We oftentimes reach the peak of pessimism. We really do. And markets bounce for no apparent reason. There's not news that makes them bounce. And as we head into the season of earnings, the earnings season coming up, and then the forecasting season where all the companies are like really cautious, how can you not be cautious in this world, right? I mean, you don't want to hang out there and go, well, you just said things were great, and then you're this quarter they weren't. You know, it's not just like liar. There's like legal liability there. So companies are cautious. And when you have an environment like this, where energy prices are super high, we don't really know what's going to happen with inflation. We've never been here before with this much of an increase in money supply. So many things that make even the next quarter really foggy. Companies will be sounding cautious. But here's what we miss. Big numbers, but they gave cautious guidance going forward. I think after the first couple of cautious guidance discussions, people will go, oh, well, of course they are. I mean, everybody's going to be. They have to be. It doesn't mean the end of the world is here, or nor do they see that as the end of the world. They just have to be cautious. They can't come out and say, we think inflation is peaking, and I mean, they might say that, but they're still going to add the cautionary notes. We're seeing signs of inflation peaking might be part of the discussions, but they're not going to make the prediction that, yeah, even though this quarter inflation was very high and it really impacted our operations and our earnings and things like that, we feel 100% confident that our costs are going to be cut in half in the next quarter. They're not going to do that. They're going to be cautious because it's what they do. And in this uncertain world that we live, and it's always uncertain, I'm not here to tell you it's like this is weirdly uncertain. It's always uncertain. But it is, in fact, more uncertain with so many things because we don't have any leadership. The strongest leaders in the world are bad guys. We don't have any white-hatted great leaders. We don't. And it makes us all, everyone, from CEOs to you and I, nervous. Because we don't have direction. We don't. We don't have an energy policy and so on. That's another segment. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But with this, and all this noise that happens, and this echo chamber that goes on, and I'll talk some more about that, about how wrong Wall Street is. It's like terrible. We have lots and lots of, if you will, adages. You know, when interest rates rise, stocks go down. Actually, that's 100% wrong. I mean 100% wrong when interest rates are low. When interest rates are high, that's true most of the time. But we say that. We make these things up. You know, the only way the market can turn around is when we have just flushed out all of the investors, all of the individual investors. You know, you and I, the dummies out there, right? The, you know, people don't really know what's going on. We got to panic, run around with our hair on fire, screaming and yelling, get me out, before the market can bottom. Well, that's just simply not true. It's not. But that's what you hear in the echo chamber. We just haven't seen any capitulation here. Okay, that's great. Guess number 3, 4, 5, 10. Haven't seen any capitulation here. Okay, that's today's echo chamber. And that's what we do. Oh, huh? Well, that's not insight. Insight is when they actually have somebody come on who says, you know, everybody's talking today about the individual investor. And the numbers we're seeing are the individual investors are getting smarter. They're not bailing out. They're actually buying more. I find that very encouraging moving forward, particularly for the overall health of the markets, when these people aren't blowing up their portfolios by selling out at the bottom every time. That's insight. We think corporate profits are going to be better than expected. Doesn't make them right, but it makes them worth listening to because it's outside of the echo chamber. We can't predict the future, says a guest, mystery guest. We don't know. I mean, they're hard to find. Somebody go, we can't predict the future. But here are the data that we're looking closely at and why we're more optimistic going forward now that we're down 20%. We're not calling for a bottom. Nobody can do that. Oh, that would be a guest that had some humility. Oh, weird. That they are worth listening to, but the echo chamber is loud. It's so loud, and it's just so focused on the same stuff all the time. We can actually listen, thinking we're getting information and walk away misunderstanding. Because all it is an echo chamber. We think we have more clarity because 9 out of 10 analysts feel like, right, this way. And we forget that 9 out of 10 analysts are wrong all the time. That's not insight. And it is one of those things as we go through periods like this where we're not sure if the market's bottoming. We're not sure if we're at the peak of pessimism. We just know it's just stinky out there. And there's no leadership. In the second hour, I'll talk a little bit about that and of course, more. But I've got to take a quick break right now. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, it's interesting as we head into earnings season, and it really starts next week. And of course, it kind of ramps up. It's a slow start. You get the banks coming out and things like that. But beyond that, it really kicks in the next couple of weeks. But you're going to start hearing about it. And it can be market moving, at least for individual stocks, even for sectors. So if banks come out and go, oh my gosh, we can't make any money in this environment because of X, Y, and Z, then the assumption is no bank in that area, in that space, right? So it can take out whole areas. But one of the things that's going to be clear in my mind is that we are going to see amazingly high energy company numbers. They are just killing it. They are absolutely killing it. They cut costs last year when Exxon lost $22 billion last year. $22 billion. They're going to make it up this year, probably and some, as all energy companies are, for the losses they had. But when they were contracting so much, when everybody was out to get them, including most especially this administration, attack, they kept cutting and cutting and cutting. And now they're sitting on a gusher, if you will, of earnings, because costs have not increased, and they learned their lesson in the last go-around. We will not spend all of this capital putting holes in the ground on marginal projects, and we have to blame them for a lot of this. These companies have been tremendous destroyers of capital for the last 20 years. They really have. But why would we also, when you're pushing to have us put activists on that hate the energy industry on our boards? So when we as a society, our administration is actively going after them, they're not going to expand. So it's interesting, we're going to see peak earnings for them. I don't know if it's peak earnings, but unbelievable record earnings for these companies, partly because of all the attacks against them. So on the flip side of that, what are we going to see? You see, it really isn't that we don't have any energy policy. It really isn't that we're stopping them from drilling. It's because they're gouging the consumers. We need a windfall profit tax and things like that because we know what that will do. We've tried it before. You get less of it. If you want less of something, tax it and regulate it. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to do, and you'll get a lot less of it. But those are going to be, I think, the earnings that people focus the most on. Now, not investors, but just the noisy press. It's okay if you're Google and Apple and you make tens or hundreds of billions of dollars every single quarter, and it keeps going up, that you totally dominate whole industries. But if you give me energy, I hate you. If I buy energy from you, I hate you. So watch this. This will be very interesting part of the earnings season, I think. I think it'll be very, very interesting. It should be quite a spectacle over the next couple of weeks to watch, if you will, liberal commentators having a conniption, and particularly the people that are trying to protect Joe because he's doing everything he can, right? Isn't that the line? We're doing everything we can. Well, what does that look like? Everything we can. I mean, seriously, like, what are you doing? Well, everything we can. Joe's doing everything he can to bring down those prices. which we don't still don't know what that means, right? So we're going to hear a lot about that. I don't worry too much about a windfall profit tax because in the end, what we've been hearing from Americans broadly is they don't blame the energy companies for this price spike at all. They blame the administration, and they're not stupid. And we're even seeing leftist commentators, if you will, come out and say this is economics 101. All right, we'll be back for hour number two. Hope you'll stay tuned. Hello, good morning, and thank you for joining us. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. Not this station, broker-dealer, or anything like that. They're my opinions. And, of course, we may mention Apple or Google or some great company out there. It doesn't mean you should own it. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, or sell. We're trying to think and grow together, and that's exactly what we're going to try to do this next hour. And I know it's hard to do right now. It's very hard to do because the world is upside down. It is. I've talked about this on and off for a very long time, and because we are moral creatures. We're born with something in us. You know, and I know people argue about that all the time, and that's fine. People can argue about anything all the time. But we inertly know the difference between right and wrong. And when we see that dialogue change to, you know, mostly peaceful protests, even though people are dying, it doesn't make sense to us. Criminals let out after terrible crimes. It doesn't make sense to us. At all. And, you know, the list goes on. And now, you know, as we roll the clock forward, what things are we solving, right? I mean, we've got Supreme Court justices harassed out of a restaurant. People illegally, it's in the law, marching in front of the justices' houses, trying to intimidate them. And this administration does nothing about it. It's wrong. It's upside down. It's backwards. It's just plain wrong. And when we think about those kinds of things, how can markets go right? I appreciate it very much. And Congressman Russ Fulcher calling in a couple of weeks ago, probably about 3 weeks ago, calling in and asking that question, what, you know, with the moral values of the United States, is that's basically what we're saying, right? Is it how do markets react to that when we can't find our moral compass? When mostly peaceful protests are okay if you're in the right, if you have the right opinions. But truly peaceful protests that are of the wrong opinion aren't. You know, I have to digress just a second here, but when I went through the Holocaust Museum, my wife and I and a whole bunch of ninth graders, I've talked a little bit about that trip. It was March, April of this year. To just be immersed in everything for a week with these 100-plus ninth graders was eye-opening, maybe even changing a little bit for me, for both of us. And you go through places like that where the entire first floor is dedicated to how in the world does this happen in this world? How can people, the entire nation, be driven to murder millions of people for no reason at all? How? How did this happen? And it's all this propaganda. It's amazing. I mean, when you go there, I've been there before. I went again. This time, this was the area that I just focused on, right? Because that's what happens every single day in this great nation. This beacon to the world. That's why it's upside down. It's wrong that there's people trying to destroy it, to distort the message. And the markets go, whatever. In fact, the markets are becoming woke, right? I mean, we're becoming weird. It's like, well, the really important thing out there is that we don't find the best board members, that we check the right boxes in the LGBTQ plus, AI plus categories. Whether they have experience or not. Stunning. It's really stunning. And it makes us feel like things can't get better. And in the short term, these things don't matter. And that's the hard part, because they really do matter in the long term for our grandkids and future generations. This stuff matters when we tear at the fabric of this country, when justices are harassed and people don't care. A vast majority of people, not majority, a huge number, it is a minority number, but it's a huge number of people are okay with it. And a few people who are in leadership, like the President of the United States, is okay with it. If they were going after leftist Supreme Court justices, do you think they'd be okay with that? I think they'd be in jail. Don't you? That's not right. On any level, that's propaganda and weird and frightening. We have crime spikes that we act like this is a totally normal thing. That Beetlejuice, or whatever her name is, in Chicago, is like parading around, swearing, and then turns around the next day and goes, we really need better dialogue. Like, who are you? What are you? How can companies do well? Two different things. We manage our life in emotional ways. We do. We manage love. We manage families. All of our relationships are emotional relationships. So is money. That's why I'm an unlicensed psychologist. It's true. Which also is really not a compliment. That's really saying, oh, good, you're crazy, because most psychologists are crazy. They're absolutely Looney Tunes crazy. So, we have crime spikes that are like, okay. Because why? Because they occur in blue areas, run by blue people. That makes it okay. There's like hundreds of people who have been shot and killed in Chicago this year. But that doesn't at all count compared to a mass shooting somewhere. It's upside down, and they don't do anything about it. We have schools that are failing. I mean, abstract failure, it doesn't matter what measure you put on it, they are failing. But they need more money to continue to do the same thing. What we want to do is double down on the same thing that haven't worked. Fantastic idea. In what world is that how you operate? No evaluation for what works or doesn't work, just spend more money. Upside down. Teachers unions overtly suing charter schools. Why? We don't want any competition. Mm-mm-mm. But the charter schools are working. Can't we just plan a bar? No, can't have them. Can't have them. Remember? Love those kids. But it's a better education. No, love those kids. Upside down. It's upside down. We have no energy policy, and we scream and yell about it. It makes no sense. Please, dear Saudi Arabia, give us more oil so we can take it with huge carbon outlays and bring it all the way across the Pacific or the Atlantic, whichever direction they go, to the United States. When we could do it greener, better here, forget about all the economic benefits that would have. Because we want to make sure that people that are deplorable, according to the president, and many other people, by the way, have lots of money to continue to fight the United States on every front. It makes no sense. It's upside down. How do markets react to all of that? And in the long run, these things are all deadly dangerous. And that's fortunately why it feels like we've reached a tipping point. where elections matter, and it's turning around, and I can't wait. Boy, I tell you what, the midterms can't get here soon enough. When the president's son is such a basket case, when the press lies about it and covers it up for the election, regardless of whether you like the guy or don't, they're propagandists, just like the Nazis. Just exactly like the Nazis. That's why it feels so bad. It's wrong. It's super wrong. But it's a long-term problem, not a short-term problem, and that's where our emotions get in the way and why we have to be careful with all of the constant inputs. More and more and more news, more and more talk radio, more and more and more, this really is terrible, doesn't help us understand that it has nothing to do with how many iPhones, Google searches, Facebook ads, chemicals people buy, energy we consume, trips we take. None. And that's what business is. When we get wound in that, and we know the world is upside down, it is wrong. And we have to fight the good fight. We have to. Who else will? The media? No. No. They're not fighting the good fight. They're not. We need to be fighting the good fight. But it cannot. It absolutely cannot govern our money. That's the short-term nature, well, if you will, of our lives. These things take a long time. It took decades for our schools to be infiltrated, top to bottom, by radical leftist viewpoints. It took decades. It doesn't happen overnight. It took decades. And it's going to take decades to unwind that. But it's starting. In the end, they didn't win. I don't know what they're fighting. And maybe that's our consolation. I don't know what they're fighting. Do they really actually believe in communism, part 133? Do they really think that we're going to get it right this time? When it's just never worked anywhere ever? And doesn't by design, when you take freedom away from people, why is that a good thing? I'm always puzzled, and maybe that's it. Maybe I just stumbled on it. You can't win if you don't actually have any real belief. When the people believe in the individual person and their individual freedom and just getting out of their way, and they believe in the pursuit of happiness, each person defining their own pursuit of happiness. That's purpose. That's vision. Freedom is vision. I don't think that the left, the far left certainly, progressives, can actually articulate what it is that they believe, other than that they're smarter than everybody else. And if you can't, I don't know how you win without a purpose. Because it takes forever, it takes decades, it takes lifetimes to pursue that, to change it. So maybe we have more hope than I sometimes feel, than we all feel. But remember, just because it's upside down, the world is backwards. It doesn't feel right. And it bothers us in some deep place. It really doesn't affect the markets in the short term. If we take freedom away, we all know that innovation, corporations, the greatest ones are right here in the United States, not all around the world. We innovate and create everything because we are the most free. We are special. And we have to cling to that. But markets don't react to long-term deterioration. They will. Things will slow down. You get dirt in the engine and don't change the oil, eventually it's a problem. And we've got a great engine here. But it takes time. And so when we take these things that are very personal, very important, very right now, and are very, very wrong, we can't look at that as, no wonder the market's bad, because it doesn't look at it that way. It's only looking at, are we going to have as many Google searches as we did last quarter? Are they going to grow by the 10% or whatever we're putting into our model? Yes or no? Not whether we're on the right track. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We got to take a quick break, and we'll take your calls on the other side. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436-580-KIDO. That's our number. Give us a call. Let's go to Terry. Terry.
Professor, how you doing?
We're doing very well, thank you. Thank you.
You pushed my buttons early this morning, sir.
I did. Okay. Well, hopefully in a positive push.
Oh, and just got me thinking, which is dangerous for an old fella, but I go back to Nancy Reagan, and this is out of context, but just say no. What would happen if business leaders, companies would stand firm, have a little intestinal fortitude, and just stop coddling or ignore these woke idiots? What would be the financial fallout?
It's an interesting question. I think it varies across the board, right? I think that if companies generally are willing to stand up and say, unlike Disney was, something as simple as, we appreciate your point of view, but we are not going to get involved in politics. It's death of a company. It's not our focus. You go out and do your thing. We are not involved. And stuck with that, right? Mm-hmm. And just said, no, I don't believe there would have been any more pushback. This is just not what we do. We do not get involved in politics. That's the appropriate answer. It always was. And when companies push at him and say, you know, Procter & Gamble is, has the devil's 666 on advertisements and all that. And they just simply said, no, we don't. And they went about their lives. And eventually the kooks disappeared. And that happens because people want the products. I mean, it's like Chick-fil-A. All the leftists are all angry at Chick-fil-A, which I find really weird. Like, did they come out and say, we believe that all people on the left need to be put in jail? No. What they said was, we're going to take Sunday off. That's it. And that's like, but that's kind of a religious statement. I know. And if you wore a turban on your head and made a religious statement, well, we love you, but we don't love this religion over here. And it's just the weirdest thing to me. That died out, right? I mean, it's just like, they're like number one. They're like the best retail experience. Everybody says, I don't even eat there, but everybody loves it. And every time I drive by one, it's like there's a line around the street. It's just incredible what they do. And so do they work? No. If companies would just say no, Terry, and that's what they need to do, is just say no. We don't get involved in this. That's other stuff. We are involved in making soap. We are involved in Google Clips. We are involved in making the greatest movies and having the greatest experiences in our parks, period. We're not about some kind of woke weirdness in the schools.
The majority of the country, left, right, center, probably 70% feel that way, mm-hmm. and would support the heck out of companies that would just do the right thing, stand firm on a moral ground, and say, I'm sorry, this is not what we do for a living.
Right,
and they would make more money at it, and if they just realized that.
Yeah, yeah. And employees wouldn't be, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, why do you think we should do that as a company? Well, we should. No, you have to understand something. Half the country believes as you do, half doesn't, or whatever. You don't have to insult them and say, far less than 1% of the people are affected by whatever AI plus is. And so we're not about that. Because 99% of the people don't even know what you're talking about. or have no idea what it would be like. Like, what do you mean you're talking to a 5-year-old in kindergarten about changing their sex? Who the heck in kindergarten knows what they are?
Yeah, now that's just wrong.
Well, but that's what they asked Disney to do, is to step into that. That's
what
the law
was. And look at Disney stock price. People are saying, no, we won't support your company. We won't buy your goods. And they're going to go the way of the dodo eventually.
Mm-hmm.
When it proves not to be profitable.
It isn't profitable. It is noisy, and a lot of people get angry, and that's not what you want as a company. What I want to be known as what? Whatever it is you're doing, you want to be the best at. You know what I love about this particular, going to Chick-fil-A, it's perfect every time. The people are the nicest people in the world, and it's high-quality, good food, period.
Yeah,
I don't go there because it's an experience of some kind on a political level.
Yeah, I found a place out on Eagle Road. Of all the things, I avoid Eagle Road like the plague, but there's a place called Culver's. Just a little...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a national chain, I think, actually.
Out of Wisconsin kind of thing, and they're growing out. And it's the same way. The kids are nice and polite, and they're and helpful, and they work hard, and they're, again, a line around the place all the time.
Yep, yeah. Yeah, that's what it, you know. What are you good at? Yeah, what are your political beliefs? I don't care, and I don't want it on the billboard. That's all, right?
Yeah,
I just don't want it on the billboard. Even if they agree with me, I don't care. Come fix my furnace. Don't really care, right? Don't make me care that you're gay. I don't care.
Yeah, well, there's a Southern phrase called "That's nice." Which means I really don't care, and F you know, that's it's a nice way of saying sod off.
Yeah.
But
I hope things are changing. It feels like they are. Terry, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome, sir. Good day.
Have a good day. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer. Also, I want to mention this, of course, podcasts. We did our Zoom meeting. I assume it's out there now on YouTube under Petso Financial. Lots of stuff. And I hope you check it out. We'll be right back after Fox News. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. All right. If you prefer email, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know, it was interesting, that news flash there that they, you know, talking about Musk bailing on the Twitter buy. And it's so interesting to me that how often the, if you will, the social aspect or the news or whatever you want to call it, intrigue, gossip, whatever it is that fascinates people, right? I mean, I don't understand shows like, you know, all the reality shows or The Bachelorette or The Bachelor. I don't get it. And I know people just like, bam, that's the shut down the world. The next episode is on. And I don't get that. But there is a fascination about other people's lives. Okay? I'm not going to get into the right or wrongs of that. I'm just saying there is. And when we have this kind of drama in business, and it's drama indeed, it has huge implications to Tesla, to Twitter, to our social media. It's a big deal. Business-wise, and it's an even bigger deal socially. What's going to happen to the messaging? Is it okay that people censor? I don't think it is. I don't think it's okay for a group of right-of-center people to censor the left. I don't. I don't think that's right at all. Everybody should have the right. As long as it doesn't infringe on somebody else, like being in front of the justices' homes and trying to intimidate people in such a way. But people have the right to not be censored. It's a huge deal. And it is interesting to me how much this is overlapping into the business world. This drama is going to be very, very interesting over the next little while And Musk just can't get out of a deal. You can't make a deal and then get out of it. We'll see what this man of many lives, and is certainly an interesting cat. This guy is something different. He is interesting, and we'll see how he comes out of this. I'm not sure that it's going to be all sunshine and roses for Elon Musk going forward. He may have to do this deal. He may be able to negotiate a better price. That's what he probably needs at this point, and what Twitter needs, because they're a basket case of money-losing nonsense. They really are. They need direction. They need a change. And they obviously can't do it themselves. So new leadership, a flush, makes a lot of sense for Twitter. But anyway, it'll be fun. It'll be most certainly interesting to watch this play out. Okay, next. I talked about this earlier. And by the way, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, if you have a question or a comment. I know we're in the middle of summer here, but, you know, I'm not. I'm here. So there you go. One of the things that I promised to talk about, you know, we touched on this about peak of pessimism over the last little bit, but the noise on Wall Street and the echo chamber of Wall Street is really interesting to me, because I get it in politics. You have your talking points, and it's everybody's fault except Joe Biden's. That's what everybody's going to say. It's the oil companies. They won't drill. They're price gouging, and they just try to have the same message, no matter what is real, right? I mean, it's an echo chamber naturally in politics, okay? But it shouldn't be on Wall Street, right? We shouldn't be just saying things that really aren't true. And yet you do. You get this echo chamber effect of people coming on, for example, and you know, the retail investors. And you know what they really mean by retail investors? The dummies. You know, the Robin Hood traders that go on and go, let's put $10 on Amazon. You know, okay. $10 on GameStop. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Hey, let me change apps. I'm going to throw $10 on the Knicks tonight, too. I mean, just that's the category, okay? It's not all that they're all dumb people. But what they're saying is the non-smart money, okay? Non-big money. Retail investors have to capitulate. They have to just throw their hands in the air and give up, because they're just too emotional to be doing this. And then once they do, bam, we have a bottom. And what is interesting about this whole discussion to me is, and thought process, this is so important, is why? And I get this all the time with really smart people, and I mean really smart people. It's like, well, I think the Dow is going to go to 29,000. It's a completely made-up number. Why do you think that, Bob? Well, you know, just think that. I know. Because you don't think it. You don't have to figure out where the market bottoms. If you think the companies you want to own, Amazon off 35% is a bargain for over the next 5 years, I think it's okay to go ahead and buy it, even if the Dow keeps going down to some imaginary number like you would actually know what that number is. Of course you don't know what that number is. It's based on nothing. Well, I think it's going to go, whatever. Whatever. We do that. And these are really smart people, right? They're really smart in the area that they're smart in. And it keeps them from having a basic, like, you don't have to figure it out. When bargains present themselves, you may own them. Period. It's okay. Even though it might go lower, because you don't get the low price. What is fascinating to me is that's so important to human beings. Oh, I should have waited. Oh, I could have bought that at 98 instead of 100. Oh, loser. We feel like a loser no matter what. And we can't. You're just set up to be like walking around with a giant L on your forehead. Like, you can't ever get that right. Nobody ever gets the low price. You don't. You don't. In 40 years, we've been really close, never dead on, really close to a market bottom in, like, you know, a few times. Not because we made a big call, just because we're buying. Oh, it went up. Look at that, and took off. Okay, grand. That's wonderful. Because what you're doing is you're nibbling on great investments, great companies at great prices, and they may get greater prices. So what? It doesn't make you a loser. And what's interesting as we go through this, it's like, well, everybody has to capitulate. No, they don't. That didn't happen in multiple markets. Oftentimes, they didn't just sell out. They're not all marked by the last one, like 2009, where lots of people made really bad decisions and got out. Lots of them. They did capitulate, and that did help mark the bottom. Not the bottom, because they capitulated in January, in February, in March. The end of October in particular. Why? Because the market had fallen 20% up to that point, and then in October alone, it fell another 20%. So people panicked at the bottom, within 10% of the bottom. I get it. It was a very difficult time. That's not beating up on people doing that. It happened in that bear market. But it didn't happen in 02. Didn't happen in the 80s. Didn't happen in 1974 bear market. It doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes it just, like, stops. That's it. But we got to say this because, you know, we're talking heads on TV. And we got to look for the bottom. No, you don't. The fear has to spike. We hear this all the time. You know, the VIX index. Everybody's all about the VIX. Why? Because during the pandemic and prior to that, in 2008-09, it spiked crazily. But what happened in 2009? It spiked like crazy in October of 2008 because the market went straight down 20% in 1 month. And we didn't know what was going on, right? Banks couldn't trust each other. It was a wow, right? Municipal bonds went down like 25%. I mean, that's how weird the environment was. Totally off the rails. So if you'll use the fear gauge as that to say this marks the bottom, well, market went down another 19% before it actually stopped falling. For no apparent reason, it stopped falling. It just stopped falling. Turned around, ripped higher. And I mean ripped higher as unemployment spiked because markets look forward. But we have to tell people, hey, we need to have a spike in fear. No, you don't. No, you don't. There is no magic to picking the market bottom. It just isn't. And I think it's kind of this thing where we hang back and don't invest in the greatest companies in the world because we're hanging back for the exact bottom. And we're told these things, right? Stocks have got to get a lot cheaper. That's another one that they love to throw out at you. You know, the average price and the Shiller Index. Good Lord, this thing's been wrong forever, and it's quoted every single day. Every day. I know, Robert Shiller, he's a genius, whatever. Shiller Index in housing as well. All these things. Just a super brilliant guy, been dead wrong and quoted every single day. Dead wrong. We go through all of these things trying to figure out what it is because there is no magic. Stocks don't hit 15 times earnings and that is it. That's the day. Go in and buy. This is the day. It isn't. Nor is it at 17 or 14. Sometimes they've gone to 8. Every market's different. The Shiller Index, back in March of 2009, when the market hit an incredible bottom, you sit back and you look at that and you go, wow, this market is actually only cheaper than 20% of the markets. Back over 100 years. Like it ever existed. I mean, that's it. This is cheaper than only 20% of the markets. This is super expensive. 80% is super expensive. So it is not cheap. And then the market went up 15% a year. And you got it right. Shiller and others are on TV talking about the fact that stocks are too expensive. All the way. All the way. from 6,000 to over 20 on the Dow. All the way. Too expensive, too expensive, too expensive, too expensive. Thank you for telling me and making me super smart to stay out of expensive stocks during the greatest bull market in history. That is wonderful. Again, we cling to these, if you will, these sayings, these beliefs, instead of actually looking at the evidence and realizing that this simple thing, you can't time it. Get over it. You don't know where the bottom is. It's okay. There's bargains. It's all right. It's all right if you don't get the exact bottom. You got a bargain. It's okay. It's going to be okay. We feel like we have to do that. And we get this all or none kind of a thought process, which is devastating. You're just not going to get it right. So when we think about that and we hear that and we hear the chitter chatter, understand that every market is different. And when we get all of these sayings, other than, if you will, a saying about emotions or, you know, something that is just kind of universally true in the market and outside the market, that you can just ignore it. It's somebody trying to make a name for themselves, somebody trying to sound smart when they're not. They don't know the future either. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're coming up on our final segment. Hope you'll stick around. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, you know, we've got a couple minutes. If you want to give us a call, please do. I had a couple of quick things that I just really wanted to reiterate, if you will, because we do have a lot of fear in about the market. There's and understandable. I I'm not dismissing it. I totally get it. This is a time when people are very, very nervous, and understandably so. There's a lot, as I said earlier, beginning of this hour, the world is upside down. And when it's upside down, we don't understand it, it makes it hard to think about investing. And so sometimes I stop and I have to say, look, there's two things that I want to make clear. When you have volatility, sell-offs, whatever you want to call it, market goes down, which is certain to do from time to time. It is an opportunity, and people miss that. It's not just, oh, I'm going to buy low. It's also an opportunity to pick up yields that are up a lot, like we've discussed before. You get 20% more yield in the overall market. You get 25% higher yield in certain stocks. You know, it just is. It's unbelievable. It truly is. And we miss that. And we also miss it in other areas. It's like, I'm really, really scared, but I would like some protection on the downside. You can do that. You can't do it with these equity indexed annuities. You can't. But what happens in a volatile period is that the deals out there, because of volatility, nothing special, just volatility. It sounds counterintuitive, but it really works. Is that you get better upside deals. The same deal 6 months ago isn't anywhere near as good as it is today. Not just because prices are down, but the deal itself. So all of those things you have to bear in mind, that really your opportunities do increase if you can see it that way. And I don't want to dive in the weeds. I've talked about notes before and how wonderful they are. And they are. We use them for, at times like this, actually tremendously, millions of dollars we use in them. But then I come back to this. Recently, I've had the opportunity twice to see Starlink in action. Right? All those satellites all around the world bouncing, not all around, but getting closer, bouncing around. Internet. To any location. Any location. And I mean high speed. I've seen it twice. And you just say, that's just one little thing of how we continue to move forward. And we can just go on and on about what's going on within medicine It's just unbelievable. You know, as we all know, because it's so yesterday, like cancer drugs, okay, yeah, big deal. Yeah, they're made for you. It's like 100% unique for you. So it works better than just to generally just go kill the body and hope we got all the bad stuff. All of those things are amazing. 3D printing of organs is coming. It just goes on and on. I got to go. Sorry, folks.